Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to the Jason in the House podcast. I'm Jason Chaffetz. Really do appreciate you allowing us to take a bit of your time. I think you're going to enjoy this one. I am really looking forward to having this conversation because we have Senator Tommy Tuberville is going to join us. Now, if you know anything about the senator, he stands his ground. He believes in what he believes in, and he fights for what he believes in. He's also been a great coach and just the nicest guy. I've gotten to know him a little bit, a super nice guy. But he's got an amazing story, and you want to see somebody rising to the pinnacle of what he does and how he does it while maintaining his kind of sense of humor and being a good, decent guy and fighting for, I just think, common sense. It's Senator Tommy Tuberville. So we are excited to dial him up. But we'd like to highlight a few things before, you know, we get to it, and then we're going to definitely highlight the stupid, because there's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere, and then we'll get on the line with Senator Tuberville. So first, a little bit about the news. I really got to highlight this Representative Corey Mills, congressman from Florida. He went down and rescued a group of Americans there in Haiti. Now, Haiti, I mean, that place is, talk about a failed state. You know, they had an earthquake long time ago. And a year or two after that earthquake, I actually, as a member of Congress, traveled down to see the devastation. And it was absolutely stunning how poor the quality of life was and how dangerous it was and how the squalor and the lack of just basic necessities in Haiti was. I'll give a lot of credit to the Sean Penn Foundation. They were actually doing some really good work there. The Bush Clinton Foundation effort, not so much. Couldn't see it. Couldn't find it. USAID in the Obama administration, I saw some signs, but really couldn't see any progress. Sean Penn was actually making a difference with his foundation. I mean, that's just, I'm just trying to call it like I see it. That's the way it was going down. But I remember thinking, how are we going to build this back? You know, for a country that is so impoverished and impoverished and they have nice resorts, beautiful beach, beautiful scenery there in the Caribbean. I mean, it's people love to go there, but it became increasingly dangerous to the point now where basically a gang is running the place. They're kicking the prime minister out. He had to flee. And it's so incredibly dangerous. And here you have a congressman who evacuates his constituents, like 10 of them, from Haiti that is literally run by a gang at this point. And he makes some very strong comments, but keep your hearts and prayers, I think, for Haiti, because there are young people, old people, innocent people who just want to live their lives. And now they're doing it under threat of a gang and gang violence that is just overtaking Port-au-Prince and the island of Haiti, the nation of Haiti, And it's so sad and it's so difficult. And it just makes you wonder, where is the United States in all this? Why is the United States not looking at its doorstep? Now, there are a lot of things we need to take care of in this country. Our southern border is probably top priority, right? But there are other things that we can do on a humanitarian side and a safety and security side. But why is it that Haiti totally gets excluded from that? It's just absolutely unbelievable and stunning. Next thing I want to talk about in the news is, you know, I can't just pass up on Joe Biden's State of the Union. You know, what I didn't see, having sat through 10 different State of the Unions, I've done 10. I've gone to 8 Barack Obama ones and two Donald Trump ones. I think that's right. And honor and privilege to be there on the floor. I will tell you that both presidents, at certain moments, everybody stood up. Patriotic things, things we can get united for as a country. Olive branches to the other party, reaching out and finding winning issues. That wasn't the Joe Biden speech that I heard the other night. That's not what I heard. That was no, you know, the whole promise of Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, was you elect me president and I'll help bring the nation together. It was as divisive or divisive, however you pronounce that word, as anything I've seen or witnessed. Now, I wasn't in the room like I had in the past, but I was doing some broadcasting with Shannon Bream for the broadcast affiliates. But the tone and the tenor seemed like he was shouting a lot, but not very many moments to actually bring the nation together. It felt like leading with Ukraine was a very, very odd way of kicking off the State of the Union. But anyway, I'm just telling you, it didn't bring the nation together. And now that we've had a week or so to digest it and actually, okay, what did that feel like? What did it do? I don't think it moved the meter anywhere. And it certainly didn't give me more confidence in the country or in Joe Biden. And Democrats are jumping around like he won the Super Bowl. Are you kidding me? Okay, so you got through an hour and 10 minutes of reading a teleprompter while yelling at the same time. I don't know how they think that that is a huge success. But I certainly saw a lot better from Barack Obama, and Donald Trump's were just amazing. Absolutely loved the Donald Trump ones. All right, time to bring on the stupid, because you know what? There's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. A Kansas judge rules that keeping biological sex on IDs does not harm transgender people. Oh my goodness. The fights that are being fought now are just flat out stupid. Like, if you're an adult and you want to do what you want to do to your body and dress and all, hey, that's your, but there's safety and security issues and reasons why law enforcement and others want to know a little bit about who you are. And I think that's actually a healthy thing. You don't have to get a driver's license if you don't want to get a driver's license. But here we are having to get another court involved. A Kansas judge ruled in favor of the state's conservative attorney general on Monday and determined that prohibiting sex changes on state IDs and driver's licenses does not violate the rights of individuals who identify as transgender. If you want to identify as transgender, great. But don't be going and pushing the state to have to do everything that you want to do in the way you want to do it. That's my point here. Don't want to linger on it, but I wanted to highlight that. All right, time to bring on our guest, because Tommy Tuberville is a senator and he's accomplished a lot in his lifetime. So I don't want to mess around with it. Let's just get him on the line.
Hello.
Senator, glad to have you joining us on the Jason in the House podcast.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be here, and look forward to having a little chat with you about just about life. You know, it's just amazing up here what I've gotten into.
Yeah, well, you know, what? You're one of the 50 most winning football coaches of all time. I've watched from afar all this college football, but you know, before we get into winning football games and what life and sports and the legislation that you're sponsoring and getting behind to kind of help protect women in sports and all these other things, I wanted to just go back and say, well, first of all, congratulations, because, you know, you've been a senator for a while now, so you got a whole new perspective. But I wanted to go back to, all right, this is where I was born. I was born in. Kind of start there, and let's kind of walk through your life, and thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. I was born in rural Arkansas, Camden, Arkansas, 1954. This will be my 70th birthday coming up, and it's been a whirlwind. You know, I'm very fortunate to be around two Christian parents, and I tell people, if you're born in this country, you hit the lottery. Then if you're born in this country with two parents especially Christian parents, you hit the lottery again. That's very hard to do, just hit one. But very fortunate to grow up in a good Christian family, went to a good high school and had a good education, and went to a fairly local university. It's a small school of about 6,000, Southern Arkansas University, played football there.
All right, wait, you're getting way ahead of me. I want to go back. Do you have brothers or sisters? Like, what was life like in rural Arkansas when you were, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know? Were you playing baseball? Were you just, no, I always loved football. What was life like back then?
Oh, no, you know, athletes at that age, and hopefully the age they are now, back when you're 5 years old until you get teenage years, you do it all.
Right.
I tell parents, do it all. Let your kids play it all and let them find out what they want to do. But had a brother that he's a musician, played music all of his life, writes songs. He can play any instruments, plays in bands. And my sister graduated and ended up being a professor at Ohio State University. And so we kind of all went our separate ways. And my dad was military. He actually landed at Normandy at age 18.
Wow.
At Utah Beach, drove a tank across Europe, was awarded 5 Bronze Stars and a Purple Heart.
Wow.
And then stayed in the military and died almost about 55 years ago on active duty. Mm. And loved the military. And so I was kind of a military brat. My mom worked for General Dynamics. And, you know, we just a working family. And I tell you what, it was, I look back now and feel how fortunate I am that I had that type of family to give me the upbringing that I had.
Well, and what was it they were doing? You know, I worry today that the younger generation, you know, every generation's different, right? They things change along the way. But I worry that the, you know, the way you described it, you know, hey, they played everything. And it's just not like that anymore. I mean, hopefully it is. But for a lot of people, no, got to specialize, got to do this. We play just this sport. And they miss a lot. I remember hearing Wayne Gretzky talking about that. Yeah, he loved hockey. That was his passion. But he played soccer, he played basketball, and he loved it. He was a better kid and a better athlete because of it.
Well, we had the opportunity, Jason, to grow up without social media and television and Netflix. Now, we had TV, but we had a TV antenna we had to go out and turn to either get CBS, ABC, or NBC, and that's all we had. And I can remember black and white TV. I can remember when color TV came in, and the only thing that was color on TV was a few commercials and the Disney beginning of the wide Disney shows, and then more and more became colored TV. But I think grew up in a very good time that we learned a lot. Again, it was still about family.
Now, were you you're an exceptionally gifted football player. I mean, what position were you playing when you were a kid?
I wasn't bad. I was a quarterback in high school, and I played defensive back in college. But the reason I played, and, you know, I didn't get to start every game, you know, but because I'm going to tell you, college football is hard. I mean, it is a full-time job, lifting weights, going to meetings, classes, and then, of course, practice time. And it's 7 days a week, 365 days. There was times I wondered, what are you doing this for? And the reason I did it was because I knew I was going to be a coach. And I felt like if I ever had the opportunity in coaching to be a college football coach, a head coach, they'd look at my resume and go, well, you didn't play in college. And how's that going to work out? So that's one reason I did it. And then, of course, it worked out from there.
Well, how did you know you were going to be a coach? I mean, could you just see the field and process that faster than everybody else? Because what people don't realize, the difference between high school, college, and then the pros is speed. Oh, my goodness. They're just big, they're fast, and it moves so quickly.
Yeah, people ask me over the years, I've given speeches all over the country, why did you get into coaching? That's one of the questions I'm always asked. And number one, I loved sports. I was a gym rat. I'd go to the gym anytime I could, played every sport. But I also wanted to stay around the game instead of just totally give it up and get an insurance business or real estate or work in a factory. I said, you know, I'm going to be a teacher coach. And these young people will keep me young. And but will also, you know, I was very competitive. And so it kind of keeps you young when you're around young people. You have to stay young. You have to stay on their level and kind of understand what they're doing. Now, I saw a lot of changes over the time when I started coaching back in 1976 until a few years ago, 2016, when I got out of coaching. I saw all kind of changes through life of what, not just what we understood as growing up, but what these kids were going through. And it kind of kept me in touch of the reality of our country and our future and our past. And it was a lot of fun. I'll tell you, you know, there's good times and bad times like anything, but I was fortunate at age 40, became a head coach and I stayed a head coach for 25 years. And you know, my kids got to grow up in it. And again, it's hard. It's stressful, but it's very, very competitive.
Now, a lot of people want to be a coach, you know, but not everybody gets a chance to do that. Certainly not to you know, even be a head coach or maybe even an assistant. Yeah. But why do you think you were able to thrive where maybe some others weren't able to?
That's a great question. Most people don't ask me that. And that is a great question. And I'm not bashful to tell people this. When I got out, I coached high school for 4 years. And then I said after 4 years, if I'm going to get into college coaching, I got to do it now. And so at a young age of about 25, I said, I'm going to go the graduate assistant route. I'm going to volunteer. I'm going to go to different universities and work, because coaching is like any other profession. It's about people. It's about who you know, who right. you've worked with. Yeah. And so I went to Arkansas State University after I coached high school for 4 years, and I worked for free basically for 2 years. Didn't make anything. Wow. And you know, I slept in the office and ate on the training table with the players. And then I got on full time finally, but I made $48,000. And this was at Arkansas State University. And I said, after a couple of years, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to sacrifice again. So Jimmy Johnson hired me in about 1985 when he first went to University of Miami from Oklahoma State. And, I basically worked for 3 or 4 years and didn't make a dime. I mean, I just put myself in a situation where if any openings came, I got on. Well, it did. And I have a lot of my buddies going now. After I became a head coach, they'd come watch us play in front of 80,000, 90,000 people after the game. They'd come by. You know, I hadn't seen them in a while. Man, you're lucky. I said, hey, listen, there ain't not any luck into this. Yeah. You could have done the same thing if you were willing to sacrifice. This country, and I always told my players this, Jason, this country doesn't owe you anything other than an opportunity to make yourself better, to make your family better, to make your life better. And if you get knocked down, it gives you opportunity to get back up and go again. And that's what's great about this country. Go earn what you want. Throw your name in a hat and get after it. And it might take you a while. It took me 5-6 years to get my feet on the ground, but I took that opportunity and said, I'm going to do it, and it worked out.
Yeah, you know, I heard somebody say many times, focus determines reality. And you're right. When you're young, you got to do the job. Then your wages and your responsibility will catch up later. But they want to see you actually do it. Not, oh, okay, here we'll give you the fancy salary and the fancy title. Now we hope you can do it. That's just not the way things work.
And don't be afraid to take a chance when you're a young person. Don't be afraid to make that move. Don't be afraid to say, you know, this is not quite what I want. I'm going to make a move. And don't ever do anything for money. Money is obviously, you have to have money. Once you get married, I wasn't married at the time, so it was easy for me to make all those moves. But, you know, you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice for what you want. There's very few of us out there, or a few people out there that were born on third base. Right. Most of us had to be dedicated for what we're doing, make our mind up, make that decision. This is what I'm going to do. And then you look down the road and you never look back. And again, you're going to run off in the ditch some, but this country gives you a chance to get out of that ditch and go again.
As you were, you know, you rose the ranks, right? So you're coaching. What was your first head coaching job?
First head coaching job was at Ole Miss in 1994. University of Mississippi. I was the defensive coordinator at Texas A&M, which I really loved, a great, great military type school.
Right.
Very conservative. Met George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush while I was there. And Senator Graham, he was a big fan. But next year, after 1 year there, after being at Miami for a few years and had great seasons there as an assistant coach, Ole Miss hired me in 1994. That was my break. Everybody said, you're crazy. They can't win there. And I said, well, you know, I'm a kid from Arkansas that not going to have a lot of opportunities. I'm not passing this up.
Right.
So I took the job, and we had three winning seasons out of four, and that enabled me to get the Auburn job and move to Auburn University in 1999.
Well, you've seen some amazing athletes along the way. When I say amazing athletes, what pops in your mind?
Oh, you know, Michael Irving, Ray Lewis, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. I coached him. I coached hundreds and hundreds of kids, Jason, that would have never had the opportunity in life that they have today if it wasn't for sports, if it wasn't for the discipline, you know, of sports, if it wasn't for the team unity of sports. And then on top of that, having an opportunity to get an education. But I was around Warren Sapp, Jerome Brown. I was around young people that were amazing, and they had the work ethic. And I've seen also now disappointed in some, not a whole lot, that had it all for them, Jason. They had the talent. They had the God-given ability to do whatever they wanted, and they didn't take advantage of it. And today, those people are not near as successful as they would have been had they had put their nose to the grindstone and went to work and even made themselves better.
You know, I've hired a lot of people through my career. And one of the things I always look for on a resume is if they played sports. Now, it could be a solo sport, but, you know, if somebody learns how to play a team sport, learns how to win, learns how to lose, learns how to work hard, show up to practice, listen to somebody else, you know, it's a pretty good indicator that they're going to be able to work with others, and whatever you throw at them, they're going to be able to overcome those challenges. But again, yeah. I worry that this generation is so, you know, the satisfaction has to be immediate. Everybody gets a trophy. You know, you can't say the wrong thing. You can't do the wrong thing. It's just, it's so, they're coddled. And I worry that they don't know how to overcome tough obstacles.
And a lot of it's because of parents.
Yeah.
It's like this NIL. It's NIL right now that's ruining college sports. You know, they want money. They want money now. Instead of saying, okay, you go put in good 4 years, get a great education, let's go to work as you're working. But the great thing about college sports, and I tell friends of mine this, and I tell people in the business world where I've spoken to many corporations, you get a chance to hire a successful football or basketball player or any athlete, man or woman, that went through college, where you only time would ever have to have two full-time jobs, which academics is one. And then once everybody else gets to go to the bar or gets to go to the swimming pool and enjoy life, then as an athlete, you got to go to work, whether it's football or basketball, weightlifting, meetings. You have responsibilities. And when you go through those 4 or 5 years and get that degree and you're successful, you know time restraints, you know how to be on time, you know how to work. You know how to work with other people. You understand winning. You understand how to win, how to handle winning. You also understand how to lose. And then you hate to say that, but you're going to lose some games. But you got to understand how you overcome that and make sure that that doesn't happen very often. So many great things come out of sports. But the other thing for our young people, Jason, is the military in our day and time. The military was the two things of sports in the military that gave our young people an opportunity to really understand the tougher things in life. I'm just afraid, as you just said, all this wokeism, this I need it now mentality, and all the things that are going on in our military, we're losing the two institutions that made this country great.
You're listening to Jason in the House. We'll be back with more of my conversation with Tommy Tuberville, the senator, right after this.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I want to expand on that military side of the equation because I know you care deeply about it, but I do have to mention, I don't know if you know about this about me, Coach, and I saw you just a few weeks ago, but once upon a time, I was actually a place kicker. I kicked for BYU back in the day, and we were actually a really good team, you know?
And, what year, Jason? What year was it?
I was a starter in 88 and 89. This is the early years of Ty Detmer, who went on and won the Heisman Trophy. And when I left, we had 5 school records. They were all extra point records. So nobody's ever really accused me of being an athlete. And I think I had Coach Lavelle Edwards is pretty good at just letting me show up to films like the night before. I didn't have to go through nearly the drills that the other guys did. But they also did expect when it was, you know, 38 yards and the game's on the line that I'd make it, which I'd like to remind the people in Utah, we never lost a game by the margin of my missed kick. So I could run for Congress there in Utah.
Yeah, the one thing, a little story I want to tell you about BYU and Ty Detmer. Every time I see Ty, I tell him, I said, you can thank me for winning the Heisman Trophy. That season we opened up, I was a defensive coordinator at the University of Miami. And we opened up with BYU.
That's right.
In Provo, national television. One of the biggest games of the year happened to be just the first game.
Yeah.
And I'd worked on stopping Ty Detmer all spring and all summer. And that kid was the most elusive quarterback that I ever had to deal with. And actually, we come in at halftime, and we're like a 14-point favorite. And we come in at halftime, and our offense couldn't make a first down. We were having a tough time stopping Ty. Our guys would give out. You know the altitude there affects people that are not that high. And Dennis Erickson come in to me at halftime. He says, Coach, what are we going to do? How we got to beat these guys? I said, listen, we've been on the field 55 snaps the first half. That's normally an entire game. I said, our guys are give out. If y'all don't start making some first downs and score some points, we're going to lose this game. And sure enough, we did. And, you know, Ty, he won that game. And won the Heisman Trophy the first game of the year. People don't realize how quickly that was won because he beat a real good football. We were very talented, but he absolutely beat us by himself with his feet and throwing the ball. Were you on that team that year?
So I was not. I left the year before that. I went to the game, but I was on the sidelines just, you know, I was doing some work for a local television affiliate, Channel 2, KUTV. But I was not in that game. But I know what you mean, because for those of us that were at this game, Ty lit it up. And you know what? You see Ty Detmer in person, you would never guess that he was a college football player. I mean, he just did not fit the mold. But boy, when the game was on, he knew how to light it up. Like, he just took command, and elusive is a great word. And you're right. It had one of the biggest television audiences. It was the beginning of the season. It was a beautiful night. And that was a big game, and he kind of let it out from there. But anyway, I could talk about that all day long. Let's go back to the military. Let's go back to the military because, you know, recruitment's way down. And life in the military is tough. It's supposed to be tough. But every time I look at the military, I want to keep calling you coach, but Senator, they keep trying to reduce the requirements. They're not raising the bar. They're lowering the bar. And I worry about what that's going to do for our readiness of a nation that needs to be able to fight and win wars on more than one front.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm on Armed Services Committee. I've traveled the world going to see military bases and talking to our young people that are, they're great people, you know, to do what they're doing, to make as little as they make. But you're right. I'm worried about our military. I'm worried, number one, our leadership. Our leadership is becoming more and more woke. this DEI that they're teaching in the military. It's causing a division. You know, it'd be like me dividing our football team and having two different groups and say, okay, we're going to dislike each other. We can't continue to do this. We have to protect not just us, but our allies. We're 41,000 people short this year in recruiting. Our army is going south. We're really known now as a naval and air military, but even that's going to end up getting us in trouble. We got a Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman that says we got to have more minorities as pilots. And listen, I coached minorities all my life, but I coach to win. Don't tell me I'm going to play the best. And when we're flying $100 million airplanes, I don't care if they're all minority. You got to train the best, and you got to put the best people in that cockpit to fight for the United States of America. Again, if it's all minorities, I'm good with it. But don't come out and tell me that we're going to have to be diverse in what we're doing. It's kind of like this commercial airline business now. Oh, okay, we got to be diverse. Wait a minute. I want the best pilot up there in that front that's flying 300 people around in a silver tube. But, you know, it concerns me, Jason, about what's going on in the military. Again, we have got some great young men and women in it. They're sacrificing, you know, for a little bit of money to protect our country. But I'm concerned about our leadership. I'm concerned about the people up top. And, you know, if hopefully hope and pray that President Trump wins this election to where we take back over the military from the people that want to take this down the road of wokeness, because if we don't, it's going to be a cancer that we'll never be able to survive from.
Yeah, I just totally believe in peace through strength. The most peaceful times in my lifetime were President Reagan and President Trump. And that's because they lived it. They personified it. Our allies loved us. Our enemies feared us. And people were flocking to come join and fight for the United States of America. It was a cool job. You revered the people who gave their life and sacrificed and worked hard, you know, people like your dad, right, who out there earning it. And I just worry that now they look around saying, oh, that sounds too hard. And I think, like, what's happened to the work ethic of our nation? And where's the patriotism and the respect for the flag of the United States of America? And I worry that we're losing that to this latest generation. I don't know how you see it, but that really does worry me.
Well, the respect starts in school, especially in the little kids coming up of saying the Pledge of Allegiance and to the flag, learning the national anthem, learning civics. You know, if I had one thing up there I could do today, I'd say, listen, you got to have a whole year of civics, two semesters in high school, and at least one semester in college. These kids need to learn about government. They need to learn about history. Yes, we've had some bad things in our history, but we also have had a lot more great things happen in history. And we've learned from our history. We've gotten better. We're 248 years. If we don't make some changes in what's going on in our country today, Jason, we won't make it much longer as a country that you and I grew up in. And I want my two boys that are 30 and 28 to have the opportunities the next 40 years that I had, if you go out and work for it. But I don't want them to have anything given to them. I want them to earn it.
Now, Senator, I think I last saw you at a Heritage event, and you were up on stage and speaking with Riley Gaines. Right. Now, we did a podcast with Riley Gaines where she told her story about having to compete against a biological male, or a male, I should just say male. I don't know why I have to say biological, but a male who was identifying as a female and told that whole story. When you get into that, you've sponsored some legislation now. You've coached at the highest levels in collegiate sports. Give us your perspective. Put some reality around what's going on here with this craziness.
Well, there's no reality to this, Jason. I can't believe you and I are even having to bring it up.
Exactly.
It's a no-brainer. We had a roundtable today here in the Senate with some coaches that quit because of it, some players that went through things that you wouldn't believe. It's just absolutely amazing. And I've got a bill that Schumer won't put on the floor, but hopefully when President Trump gets elected and we take the Senate, It's called the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. And I got another bill that says Protection of Women and Girls in Amateur Sports and Olympics, because Olympics now is becoming woke and they're allowing boxing men to box against women this summer in Paris. You can't make it up. I mean, it's not only wrong, it's dangerous, it's unsafe. And to dress, let these young men dress with girls and women in dressing rooms. I mean, where are the parents? Where are the activist groups? I mean, we need to stand up for this. They're going to ruin women's sports. Title IX is going to go south. It's one of the best bills in the last 50 years that's ever come out of Washington, D.C. to help women become the same as men and boys and give them the same opportunities. But I'll tell you, this country gives you an opportunity, Jason, to be what you want to be. You know, it's a free country. But it doesn't give you the right to discriminate. And that's what this is. It's discrimination and letting boys say they're girls and being able to participate in something that the girls only have worked all their life, and they don't physically stand up to most men or boys. It just doesn't happen. And so we've got to get some common sense back in this country. Just unfortunately, Joe Biden, this is one of the biggest things on his agenda, is to force this down the throats of the American people. And I'm telling you, he's getting ready to lose millions of votes, hopefully a lot more than that, but millions of votes just because of this one subject on transgenders and women's sports.
Well, and I think it's going to be at the ballot box and voting out some of these crazy policies. You just can't let it stand. If you want different results, you're going to have put in different people. I mean, it's just, you know, the support of this. Now, some people are in favor of it. That's their right. They can get behind that. But, you know, if it affects you, if you see what it's doing to harm the country, then, yeah, it needs to be taken care of. All right. I have just a few more questions. I know we're running out of time, but walk me through that decision to say, you know, I've been a really successful football coach. I think it's time to get into politics. Like, how did that happen?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I got out and started working for ESPN for a few years, and yeah, that was good, but it wasn't like coaching. And my wife and I sat down and prayed about, you know, something that I could help. You know, I was never in the military. My whole family was in the military but me. And my dad, as I said, passed away on active duty. And I had not given back to the country that gave me the opportunity to do what I did. And so I looked for several things to do. I thought about running for governor of Alabama, and I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And then President Trump inspired me to run for the Senate, because I had seen for the last 40 years going to all 50 states, which I did visit, including America Samoa, going to high schools, talking to counselors, principals, superintendents, teachers, and I saw the direction of our education. Jason, it's horrific, especially the last 15 years. The unions have taken them over. They have run them in the ground. It's more about the teachers and the administrators than it is about the students now. We've got to get back to teaching our kids, number one, reading, writing, and math, and to respect and love this country. Because right now, in the last 15, 20 years, that has not happened. And that is one of the main reasons we're in the situation we are today. So I ran. And I won, and I'm on the education committee and several other good committees. But that is the reason I wanted to be a difference and do my service to my country that I couldn't do in the military, you know, because there was nothing really going on when I got out of high school back right after the Vietnam War.
Well, that was certainly appealing in mass, because you had so many people get behind you. And you know, you always love somebody who does it and doesn't need to do it. You could have sailed off in the sunset and gotten really good at bass fishing or something like that. So I'm glad that you're serving. Senator, Coach, I've got a couple rapid questions and we're going to wrap this up. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
All right, first concert you attended?
Paul Revere and the Raiders. You don't remember those.
It was that'd be stretching.
Oh, this is back in the mid-70s. I was in college. And the second one, just a couple weeks after that, I saw the Jackson 5. That was before it was just Michael Jackson. It was the Jackson 5 in Shreveport, Louisiana. So some of your listeners will remember Paul Revere and the Raiders. And And of course, everybody remembers the Jackson Five.
Yeah, well, my first concert in Colorado, Denver's Mile High Stadium, was Michael Jackson. So yeah, that was mine. What was your high school mascot?
Hornets.
That makes sense. All right.
Yep.
What was your first job? When were you got a check from somebody else?
Oh, I worked in a clothing store on weekends when I was in college, selling very, very good clothing and suits. And I learned back then quality clothing lasts a lot longer than what you buy at some of these overnight stores. So that was my first job.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
No, good answer. See, Coach, Senator, this is why. This is why we like you so much. Yeah. All right, real quick, best advice you ever got?
Organization is a key to victory.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, organizing a group of, teenagers on a football field and all the coaching and all the background and the films and the analysis, that is an organizational task, to say the least.
But Jason, it's not just not with other people, it's your life. Organizing, what you do when you get up every day to have a purpose of what you're going to do that day. A lot of people just go through life with no plan, no goal or anything. If you organize and understand what you want to get done that day, you would be shocked at how much more you get done other than wasting time. And of course, all of us waste a lot of time on social media, but there's some of it's good, but some of it's not real good, but it takes a lot of time away from actually getting something done for your future.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Last question. If you could change one thing in the United States Senate, what would you change?
I would, if anything that I could do with a magic wand, I'd close down the Department of Education, let every state run their own Department of Education.
Amen. Love that answer.
We're ruining this country. Jimmy Carter started. It's actually illegal. It's against the Constitution. He started the Department of Education. We have 5,000 employees up here that don't even go to work. They work from home. And I'm not going to say they're useless. There's probably some that do a decent job. But we could send it back to our states and let them teach the things in our culture of our states. Every state's different. And every state needs the ability to take that money that goes to Washington, D.C. to go back to them and make better education. Because education is the key to this country. And if we don't get back to educating our kids of the history and the patriotism of what our country is about, we will not make it another 100 years, maybe not another 50 years.
Well, it's a great way to conclude. Senator, Coach, thank you. Thank you for stepping up and doing that. And we've watched, countless games, thrilling games, and had a lot of fun. And thank you for your dad and his sacrifice that he did, laying down his life for the country. And thank you for your willingness to serve in Congress, because it is frustrating. I've been there. It is frustrating. But thanks for your willingness to do it. And thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Do appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And if you see Ty Detmer, tell him that I said hello.
Oh, I will. I'm going to call him up tonight.
All right. God bless. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you. All right. We can't thank the senator enough, Tommy Tuberville. The fights he fights, I think, are worth fighting for. And I love that he just calls it like he sees it. And that's endearing. He's not after some new business card. He's not trying to get, ahead somewhere or something. He's just trying to do the right thing for the constituents and the good people that he represents. So can't thank him enough for being here. Hope you could rate the podcast. Hope you can subscribe to the podcast. I want to remind people you can listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. You can find more from the Fox News Podcast Network over at foxnewspodcast.com or pretty much wherever you listen to a podcast. Again, like it, rate it, review it, and we'll be back with more next week. I'm Jason Chaffetz. This has been Jason in the House.
from the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.